Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney. I'm pleased to be escorting you about the battle space of the War of Ideas with four very interesting guests today. We'll be speaking first with Corey Shockey of the Hoover Institution, a woman with long experience in the government, about the Night of the Long Knives, now in prospect for defense, as well as a very important initiative aimed at helping our heroes. Second segment, we'll be talking with Daniel Bonino, a man who has turned in his badge in order to run for the United States Senate. It's an interesting story of a man willing to enter the arena to help save his country. Segment three, we'll be talking with a senior serving FBI man about the threat of cyber attacks and what the Bureau is trying to do to protect all of us against it. And finally, segment four, Representative Louis Gohmert will be joining us to give us his take on the budget and debt deal and where we're going to go from here on that, and also the advisability of engaging the Muslim Brotherhood as partners in countering violent extremism. So all of that in a very full hour. But first up, Corey Shockey is joining us from California. It's great to talk with you, Corey. You have been following and making public policy in the national security area for some time. I wanted to get your read on what is now in prospect in terms of possibly gutting our national security in the interest of trying to reduce the red ink. What's your take?
Well, I am less concerned than many of my fellow conservatives about the first tranche of cuts that the budget bill that was agreed last week make. It looks to me like that will require between 2 and 3% cut in defense spending over the course of the next 10 years. And that, while difficult to do when the country is fighting two wars, strikes me as manageable within the portfolio that DOD has laid out in the Gates era. What I'm principally concerned about is the prospect that the second tranche of potential cuts, that is, if the 12-member congressional commission that's being put together can't reach an agreement on cutting entitlement programs, if it pushes that spending into discretionary, especially under this administration, which I think has been quite reckless in how it thinks about your point earlier about the battle space of ideas. The way that the president talks about cutting defense spending, about how that budget's so big that, you know, just cut 1% and you can afford everything else you want in the government. That's just a fundamentally reckless approach. He doesn't seem to understand that defense spending is a different kind of obligation and one that he as commander-in-chief has resting solely on him in the way that other federal obligations are not. And so I think they're really setting up, given the likelihood that the commission will deadlock, the administration actually is taking us in a dangerous direction.
Yeah. Corey, let me ask you, you've got a perspective on this that I think is particularly valuable, namely the argument that we cannot be a strong power. This may be true over the long term without being a strong economic power. But as President Reagan pointed out back in 1992, in the short run, we may need to attend to our national security even in a circumstance in which we're not as strong economically as we want to. And I guess what I'm interested in is knowing what you do about how others respond to or perceive these sorts of changes in American power, are we not setting up not only a hollow military, but perhaps a vastly more dangerous world in which to have one?
That is such a terrific question, Frank. We don't get to choose when our enemies decide to challenge us. And the way that the administration is talking about defense cuts, as though they have no consequences, you know, in the president's budget speech in April, where he introduced the gauzy second version of his budget, literally the only area he identified for cuts was $400 billion out of defense. In no other aspect of federal spending did he say, did he establish a target for defense cuts. And I think that gives the administration's perspective. And if I were an enemy of the United States, I would understand that as a fundamental weakness. It will encourage challenges to us instead of discourage challenges to us.
There we go. Deliberately, perhaps, creating new vulnerabilities and inviting new risks. I was interested that when the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Admiral Mike Mullen, sort of placed that threat of the debt as the top national security challenge we face, he was countermanded by his successor, the incoming chairman, Marty Dempsey. How do you sort that? The guys who are currently coming into office, including General Dempsey and others in the other services, are apparently, even though they've been appointed by President Obama, quite concerned about what is in fact now in prospect. Rightly so?
I think that's right. The vice chiefs of all of the services testified on Capitol Hill last week, and all four of them were harbingers. We're arguing that the kinds of cuts that people are now talking about are so deep into the bone of our defense strength that they're genuinely worried. I think there are two differences in the perspective that Mullen brought to the perspective that Dempsey brought. The first is that Admiral Mullen's quite right in the overall frame of reference, that the economic vitality and strength of our country is perilously put at risk by deficit spending, and that we need to get our economic house in order. That's absolutely true, but it does not follow that defense needs to be the bill payer for doing that. And I think that's the difference in perspective that we're seeing, that when Mullen was making that case most vociferously over the course of the last couple of years, he was trying to raise consciousness, as so many conservatives in Congress have been trying to raise consciousness, that our country's on an unsustainable path and we need to muscle up to the bar and make hard choices about entitlement programs. And I think what you're hearing out of even Secretary Panetta yesterday in his press conference at the Pentagon, pointed out that, you know, defense and other discretionary programs are not the main driver of our indebtedness, that we need to put our entitlements on a sustainable footing, and pushing off that reckoning into discretionary spending is a big mistake.
Right. Well, we'll hope that Leon Panetta, who's got a reputation in Washington certainly as a budget expert, will be able to prevail in this argument. We're talking again with Corey Shockey. She is currently a research fellow at the Hoover Institution and formerly served, among other things, as the Deputy Director for Policy Planning in the Department of State. Her most recent book is Managing American Hegemony, Essays on Power in a Time of Dominance. Corey, let me turn to one other thing you've written about recently in connection with the website of the Hoover Institution about helping American veterans. And I'd really love to hear you plug a very important and highly laudable initiative.
Yeah, there are two great initiatives out there. The problem they are seeking to address is the unemployment rate among veterans, which is substantially higher. It is double the overall unemployment rate in the country, and it is especially egregious for young veterans, ages 18 to 23, the kids who are carrying the weight of our wars on their shoulders. And their unemployment rate is almost 30%. That is nearly three in ten of the young veterans coming out of the service cannot get a job. And given that we integrate our society roughly through employment, this doubly disenfranchises our young veterans. They're not working, and they're not mainstreamed in American society. The Chamber of Commerce has a Hiring Our Heroes program that they're just getting started to try and encourage businesses to focus on young veterans. And there's also a terrific nonprofit called Hire Heroes. and it focuses on helping young veterans figure out how to translate their experience, their credentials from their military service into the private economy. In my experience with veterans, the biggest problem that they have in transitioning to civilian life is that they don't really know how to talk about the extraordinary responsibilities that they've had at quite young ages in the military.
Very important initiative, very important need to be filling. Corey Shaikey, thank you so much for bringing it to our attention and for the great work you're doing out at the Hoover Institution. Please come back to us soon. Next up, we've got Daniel Bonino talking about why he wants to get into the arena in the United States Senate race in Maryland. Fascinating story as well. Straight ahead.
First line of defense in the war of ideas. Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
My name is Sunday Hollis, and I totally lost the cravings for sweets. I totally lost the cravings for bread, even meat. And some people, you know, you would see people say, oh, well, you're eating a salad because you're trying to diet, but you just don't have a taste for any of the junk anymore. And it is so, so, so true. I'm thinking this is something that the celebrities are using. They're just not giving the meta system the credit for it. I've tried everything under the sun, and this is the only product that I have even called the company and asked them, could I sell it for them? This is a product where you can actually use the word awesome. I mean, and it is the whole essence of the word awesome.
Don't wait another minute to start losing weight. Call Judy Singer's The Meta System at 1-800-711-JUDY. That's 1-800-711-JUDY.
The first step in winning a war is to know whom you're fighting. 9 years after 9/11, the U.S. security establishment has failed to tell us. The very words we need to describe the war are being outlawed. We went from the war on terror under Bush to the war on man-made disasters under Obama. Neither identifies the threat doctrine behind the aggression, Islamic Sharia law. That's why the Center for Security Policy assembled Team B, an independent group of national security professionals, including Bill Clinton's Director of Central Intelligence, James Woolsey. The result is a book that challenges the assumptions of the current administration and exposes the supremacist nature of Sharia and the jihad its adherents are obliged to engage in. This report names the names of those responsible and makes plain the mortal peril now posed to America's Constitution, our national security, and way of life. For more information, visit ShariaTheThreat.com or order your copy of Sharia, The Threat to America at Amazon.com.
Experts say there's no shortage of crude oil.
There really is no shortage of oil at the moment.
So why do gasoline prices keep going up?
There's all this fear that's out there, and that really goes a long way to making prices go up.
And home prices seem to be headed even lower.
We really aren't seeing any markets that are showing any sustained recovery at this point.
Now more than ever, is this a timeout or a double dip?
This could halt the economy's recovery in its tracks.
1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back, joined by Daniel Bonino. He is a public servant who has worked for the New York City Police Department and the United States Secret Service, who has left the Secret Service for the purpose of entering the arena to join the public sector in a different respect as a candidate for the United States Senate, going up against the incumbent, Ben Cardin, currently representing the state of Maryland in the United States Senate, in the 2012 election. And Danny, if I may call you that, I've been hearing about your extraordinary record, your appearance on the public screens, particularly Fox and CNN and ABC and other programs, I guess principally because people are wondering why anybody in their right mind would give up a perfectly good job putting their life at risk every day to protect the president and others in the Secret Service to serve in the United States Senate, especially in a democratically dominant state like Maryland. So tell us a little bit about your background, how you came to this decision, and what animates you at the moment to take this task on.
Sure. Great question. No question it was high risk. We are in the middle of a deep recession, possibly depression. To give up the security of a government job halfway done with your career was a decision I deliberated on long and hard with my wife before I did it. But I've always been an avid follower of politics, and I really believe we've reached that event horizon where it's time for normal folks with real lives, who've lived lives with real consequence, you know, get off the couch and get on the football field and start throwing a pass. It's very easy for me to sit there and scream at the TV when I hear something I don't like, but you know, I hear this constant dialogue with we hate career politicians. Well, that's why I'm here. I'm not a career politician. I have a good grasp of the issues. I've done enormous amounts of research on economics, foreign policy. I've been in the White House for 5 years of my 12-year career. But I'm a normal guy, like everyone else, who's just fed up with career politics and business as usual. It's clearly failed.
Yeah. I guess from the vantage point of somebody working in the White House, you've seen some of the failings of it up close, I'm sure, and personal, as they say. I'd like to think our audience is reasonably astute about all kinds of things, but I know they're particularly interested in, as I am, sort of matters of homeland security and law enforcement and intelligence and national security more broadly. Give us a sense as to what your view is on those sorts of issues. Obviously, as a career law enforcement officer, that you bring not only as background but as part of what you'd like to see your service be about in this next phase of your career.
Sure. I always say, having traveled to 27 countries, the one commonality is always an enormous line around the block at the embassies everywhere in the world, and from countries that we've been told by some that, oh, they don't like the United States. Well, that's not what I've witnessed or seen.
They're not there protesting.
No, they're not. They're there trying to get a visitor's visa or some other document, enter the United States. Right. Also, just having traveled to these countries and dealt with everyone from cab drivers to hotel staff, the negativity I don't find to be genuine. I really don't. When you really get down to the nuts and bolts, they understand the United States has always been a force for good. Now, I mean, let's be honest, we've had our failings, like everywhere, country of human beings. The air is human. But have our failings been that much greater than the rest of the world, or have we not been a lodestar for the rest of the world when it comes to democracy and freedom? It's been interesting to see that different perspective up close rather than what we've been told.
Right. Where do you see the most important differences between yourself and, at the moment, you don't have a primary opponent, as I understand it, in the race. So looking at your prospective rival, Ben Cardin, what are his positions on the sorts of things that have, brought you to this race that you think need correcting?
Yeah, there's so many. There's just a plethora of issues to start with. But the first one is just the priorities. The priorities in a voting record. The voting record's there. This is a man, and I have a lot of respect for him personally. This is not in any way a personal gripe, but he really believes that government can spend money better than you can. I mean, his record on taxes is terrible. He was given a 25% rating by the American Taxpayers Union. I said, that's incredible. If you got that on a test in high school, you'd think there was a mistake, 25%. He really believes they can spend money better than you can, but that really, to me, is not the big hang-up, just parlaying back to national security. When they do take your money, they allocate it to the Cowboy Poetry Festival and items like this, where when it comes to issues like education and national defense and a court system, we're fighting for every dollar. Mm-hmm. That seems to me quite bizarre. If we don't have a country to defend, the rest of the issues are irrelevant, are they not? Who's worried about health care if we're being attacked? It just seems to be a bizarre priority of some of those that lean towards that direction, and unfortunately, I think he's of that belief.
Well, let me ask you about this. He voted this week for an arrangement that will make probably quite dramatic reductions in defense spending, ostensibly as part of an overall effort to bring down the deficit. But the cuts may be as much as $1 trillion. And I wonder whether that's a point on which, were you in the Senate today, you would have disagreed with him, and or as you look down the road to the process that he's helped put in train, you would be working to counter this as a prospective way of trying to deal with the tide of red ink by hollowing out our military.
It seems like a bizarre initial target, doesn't it? Now, there's no question there's bureaucracy and streamlining of best practices and business practices we can apply to the Pentagon like everywhere else. I was in the Secret Service 12 years. No one in the Secret Service is going to tell you there's not a better way to do things. Mm-hmm. Of course we can streamline bureaucracy and save money. But to absolutely gut the military, I saw something like it could be $1.5 trillion in cuts. I mean, that's not a best practices. Mm-hmm. That's a complete destruction of our entire military apparatus. You can't make up for that kind of loss of capital resource. You just can't.
Yeah. We're talking with Danny Bonino, Daniel Bonino, properly described. He is running for the United States Senate in the state of Maryland. He has served his country in several capacities in the law enforcement line of work. And I guess I want to turn to one other issue before I have to let you go, Danny. You have indicated that a personal priority for you is the protection of America's allies, most especially Israel, in a very dangerous part of the world where our interests are on the line, as well as obviously those of the people of Israel. Tell us a bit about your perspective on that and what priority you believe that ought to enjoy in this difficult time of budget reckoning.
I find it incredible that this is even a serious topic of conversation. They've been a historical ally to us. You know, Arabs in the Middle East have greater freedoms in Israel than in some Arab countries. It's, like I said, it's bizarre that this is even a serious argument by some on the other side who seem to demonize Israel. Now, again, I'm not saying that they haven't had fault in some issues, and Israel, I'm sure, would acknowledge that. But they're our staunchest ally in the Middle East. I mean, all we ask is their basic right to survive. I mean, they have existential threats daily in their lives. Can we really say that? When I go home every night, you may worry about your car being broken into once in a while, but do you worry about a rocket hitting your house? These are legitimate problems. We have to be rock-ribbed in our support of Israel, and it just amazes me that some seem to look to every single event in Israel for blame on their side rather than on the other side. I'm a staunch supporter and always will be.
Yeah. It's a time when I think, especially as you appreciate, having been in the line of fire in the Secret Service, deterrence is a big part of defending the things that matter to us. And my concern, and I gather it's yours as well, is to the extent that the President of the United States and, for that matter, his administration is signaling daylight between us and the Israelis, it can only weaken deterrence and set, I'm afraid, in train conditions that might make for not just grave existential problems for the Jewish state, but for the rest of us as well. Danny Bonino, I hope you'll return to our microphones in the future. I wish you the best of luck. We will extend an invitation to your opponent to join us as well in the interest of equal time, but I appreciate very much what you've done in the past in serving your country and look forward to seeing how you'll serve in the future as well. Thank you for joining us and come back to us again soon.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much. Thanks a lot.
Next up, a senior FBI agent describes the threat of cyber attacks and what they could mean for you, what the Bureau is trying to do to stop them. Straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Hi, NBA forward Kevin Durant from the Oklahoma City Thunder. Here with Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck to remind you to get moving every day.
Because when you get moving an hour a day,
you'll have more energy to do the things you like to do.
And that a slam dunk.
Whether you like to shoot hoops like me, skateboard, ride a bike,
or dance on your roof, just move it your way.
For an hour a day. Because moving every day puts you on the offense towards a stronger you.
And that makes you part of a winning team.
I couldn't have said it better myself, Bugs.
So be a player.
Be a player.
Get up, play, and move it your way. Check out how to be a player at letsmove.gov.
Head online to get tips on great ways to get moving every day.
You said it at www.letsmove.gov. Let's hear that one more time, Doc. That's www.letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
For decades, the Democratic Republic of Congo has endured economic collapse, poverty, and war. More than 3.5 million people have died in the conflict. Today, rebel forces continue to wreak havoc in the eastern Kivu provinces. The International Rescue Committee estimates that 30,000 children have been recruited as soldiers, and thousands more have lost their parents. Most of these children lack the most basic level of goods, security, and most especially, clean drinking water. Yet, there is a well of hope coming to eastern Congo in a village called Uvira. Washington, D.C.'s National Community Church is partnering with Global Outreach to bring a water pipeline to the Congo for Christ compound, an orphanage for children who have lost their parents to war and AIDS. Building a clean water source will sustain the school, provide for the children, and hundreds more in the village. Go to www.waterforcongo.com. Learn about the work of Global Outreach and give. You can be part of the community in Uvira, and like a well, you can be a source of hope in life. www.waterforcongo.com.
In 1966 in Anchorage, Alaska, a talented child was born. He would go on to be one out of only 11 Alaskans to make it to the major leagues. The odds of him striking out more than 3,000 hitters? 1 in 33 million. The odds of this pitcher being selected to the Major League Baseball All-Star Game 6 times? 1 in 48 million. The odds of this fast-balling philanthropist winning the World Series 3 times? 1 in 3 million. The odds of this man having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 110. Hi, I'm Kurt Schilling. Learn the signs of autism at autismspeaks.org. Autism is getting closer to home. From 1 in 5,000 only 20 years ago, today 1 in 110 children are diagnosed. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
What are you doing?
Filling out a loan application.
I can help you get approved, you know.
Really? How?
With this.
A bag of sand?
It's not a bag. It's a pouch. And it's not sand. It's credit fairy dust.
Credit fairy dust?
Yes. I sprinkle some fairy dust on the application, and your credit rating magically improves.
There's no such thing as the credit fairy.
An unbeliever now. But what will you think when your loan is approved?
I'll think my credit score improved because I paid my bills on time, kept my credit card balances low, and only opened a new card if I really needed it.
It's the dust.
It's sand.
Don't deny the credit fairy.
There's no magic to improving your credit, but there is help, and it's free. Go to creditfairy.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the Consumer Bankers Foundation, the Leadership Conference on Civil Rights Education Fund, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Frank Effney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. We are joined by Austin Burgless. He is the coordinating supervisory special agent in the New York office of the FBI with responsibility for its cyber branch. And after serving 6 years in the United States Army, he has worked his way up through the ranks of the FBI to this august position and assumed some very important responsibilities. And we're anxious to have a chance to visit with you. You wrote a piece in Homeland Security Today last month, Austin, about the gravity of the problem that we as a country, whether it's individual citizens or private sector companies or the government itself, are currently experiencing at the hands of seemingly both individual hackers and perhaps some with state sponsorship. Give us, if you would, sort of your overview of how real this problem is and what kind of implications it has for us as individuals and as a society.
Sure. Well, as the world gets more connected on the internet, everything they do becomes more vulnerable. As companies put more of their internal documents and proprietary information on the internet, accessible remotely by employees and customers of that company, they become more vulnerable. Because in this day and age, we tell companies that if anything in your organization is accessible by the internet, it's accessible by the bad guys as well. So even if they feel their proprietary information or their crown jewels is safe and secure inside their environment, if there's any way to access that network from the internet, it's going to be vulnerable, because just like it's the FBI's job 24 hours a day, 7 days a week to catch these cyber criminals. It's their job to find the exploits and the vulnerabilities to get into these environments.
Yeah. If I can just interrupt you, because you made this point very directly in this this article in Homeland Security Today. You said, quote, given enough time, motivation, and resources, a determined adversary will likely be able to penetrate any system directly accessible from the Internet. This is really a stunning depiction of a problem that I suspect most of us haven't a clue about. You know, firewalls and other techniques that are supposedly protecting our information are clearly, in your estimation, not up to the job, given the time and so on. To what extent, if I may, ask you to just elaborate on what that means in terms of potential loss of proprietary data or classified information to a society like ours?
It's huge because it's forcing companies to weigh how much money they want to spend up front for their IT protection. If you have a law enforcement organization telling companies that if they haven't been hit, it's just a matter of time, how much money do they put up front to protect themselves, knowing that it's just a, you know, it's just a matter of time before they're going to have a problem, and that problem could cost them millions of dollars for to fix it. So right there, we've seen it. We have ongoing cases currently where very, very large institutions have been compromised. Sometimes that compromise started years ago. They've had an adversary inside their environment for many years, unbeknownst to that company, and it's taken, you know, millions and millions of dollars to patch the system.
Yeah. We're speaking with Austin Burglis from the FBI's New York office, its cyber branch. Let me ask you this, if I may. Even the FBI itself is, according to the Mobilepedia column at Forbes magazine, been shown to be vulnerable. And I appreciate you probably can't talk about the ongoing case, but one of your security contractors evidently was hacked by this group of anonymous hackers, and they posted some 400 megabytes of data ripped off and made public by some sort of anonymous group of hackers that are targeting our federal and other agencies. To what extent can the FBI, Austin Burglis, be in the business not only of trying to prosecute people for crimes like this, but prevent them in collaboration with the National Security Agency or perhaps others in the government so as to protect us, you know, actively and not just after the fact?
Yeah, it's very difficult. Just like, first of all, the FBI as an agency maintains its classified information in a contained environment that is not accessible from the Internet. It's not Internet facing. So none of our classified information is taken in any of these breaches. And second is, it's very difficult to protect these types of attacks. Anonymous and groups such as Anonymous, their sole purpose is to embarrass governments, law enforcement agencies, and to show that no security is good enough security to prevent a breach of data. But what law enforcement can do, and specifically the FBI, is create kind of a deterrent effect. Like in drug dealing, if you arrest the biggest drug dealer on the corner, in a week, the next guy is going to be there doing the same thing. And it's a very, very difficult problem to eradicate. And that's the problem we're having in the cyber realm. We take down a large group, in a week or so, there's going to be another group doing the same thing. So it's the deterrent effect. It's the stiff penalties. It's the sentences. It's the large takedowns of their leaders who they believe are anonymous and untouchable by law enforcement. And when we're successful in operations such as that, it sends a message to them saying you are not anonymous no matter how hard you try to mask your identity.
Yeah. I imagine that one of the other problems that you're confronting is not only just the willingness of people to engage in this sort of activity, but the ever-changing array of techniques that they have to do it, both through things like botnets, I think you mentioned in your in your piece, and malware and Trojan horses and heavens knows what all else. To what extent, as a technophobe myself, I have to confess, does all of this become more difficult as we move in computing technologies to things like cloud-based information systems, or are there other areas that are of particular concern to you as you're trying to do your job, Austin Burglis, in protecting us against this stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the number one problem that faces law enforcement right now is the ability to anonymize an identity, to use multiple proxies, to hop through multiple countries. The fact that the internet is worldwide creates probably the largest problem for law enforcement. We are improving in that realm in the fact that we are strengthening ties with many, many of our international partners so that if a subject is using an internet service provider overseas, we are able to obtain records and continue to trace their activity through those proxies and hop points that they're using.
Yeah. And I guess that really raises the last question that I wanted to put to you. And to what extent is there evidence that we are witnessing states sponsoring at least some of these attacks? And how much harder does that make your job?
Good question. Over the past few years, there is a kind of a blurring of lines between what we think is the hacker that is intent on making $1 million by compromising a large financial institution and wire transferring money out of multiple bank accounts overseas and becoming a rich man. We're seeing a blurring of lines between what we used to believe is an attack by a foreign power, a nation state, to steal any type of information that would advance them economically, politically, or socially. We see that some of these nation states are hiring these top-level, traditionally criminal hackers to kind of do their dirty work, to get them in the door so that they can steal their information or put in tools for the advanced persistent threat. That is probably the latest trend. As far as investigating, it really makes no difference. We're going to find out who's responsible for the intrusions, but it kind of breaks down the traditional line between what we used to see as, okay, this is a foreign nation state looking to steal secrets to get ahead of us and an advantage, and the what we saw as the criminal hacker and its associates looking just to get ahead and with financial gain.
Austin Burglis, we appreciate your efforts to counter both, and needless to say, your service to our country more generally is deeply appreciated. Please come back to us if you would with any updates on this, because it's a matter of grave concern to all of us, and I know that the American people support what you're doing and wish you well. Next up, we will be talking with Congressman Louie Gohmert of Texas about the debt deal and where it's going to leave our national security. Straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
I was able to lose the 80 pounds I gained due to pregnancy. It was pretty easy to eat whatever I wanted and not think about it.
The Meta System from Judy Singer has been helping make weight loss easier for a quarter century.
My husband's grandmother used it 20 years ago to lose weight for a wedding and said it was the only way to go.
The Meta System also has an excellent support staff.
They were very supportive. The first time that I ordered the product, they called me and suggested that I order a lower dosage to begin with. They didn't want me to jump the gun right off the bat, and it was nice to know that they actually cared.
And the weight loss is so dramatic, people wonder.
With the Meta System, I've got many questions about how I managed raising a baby and working full-time and lose the weight and eat whatever I wanted.
People who use it recommend it.
I suggested the Meta System to my mother, and she has lost 30 pounds.
Learn more about weight loss with Judy Singer's The Meta System by calling 800-711-JUDY, 800-711-JUDY. The Meta System from Judy Singer, the powerful, all-natural way to lose weight, 800-711-JUDY.
Hey, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces, in the war of ideas. Like the real special forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real special forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a non-profit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its special forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have held the same mirror for 13 years.
I have been decorated with purple dinosaurs, baseball teams, and football helmets.
I have witnessed 33 Thanksgiving dinners and one wedding proposal.
I have tiny notches marking the growth of three children.
I have caused a learning disability.
I am the reason that a fifth grader simply can't sit still.
I am responsible for a five-year-old's rage.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home is built before 1978, your family could be at risk. Let's make all kids lead-free kids. Log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
I am the reason a child has trouble hearing.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
In Washington, Hugh Hewitt has the diagnosis.
They don't understand the need for speed.
Oh, we'll get to it. Don't worry. We'll get it done. Open amendment process, blah, 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 blah.
Not in the least bit clued in to the sense of urgency, but I don't think the Beltway is.
I'm just beginning to think it is a Beltway disease.
Kind of an invisible wall separates them from what the people think.
The Hugh Hewitt Show, weeknights from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New Choice, intelligent talk.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone. At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here, just like they did over there. So now, I'm never alone. I can get the resources I need and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill,
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home,
or meeting people you can share stories with,
you'll find it at IAVA.org.
Even if it's just everyday stuff,
like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say that?
Really?
What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We've got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back, joined by one of our all-time favorite guests and eminent members of Congress. He is Congressman Louis Gohmert. He represents the 1st District of the great state of Texas with great distinction. He doesn't agree to that, but I insist upon it. It's certainly true. How are you, Louis? It's great to have you back with us.
Man, it's always good to be with you, for sure.
Well, you're back home on a well-deserved R&R down there, I'm sure. Let me ask you.
Well, it's not exactly R&R when we're back in the district. It means I'm all over East Texas, and that's the way I like it.
Well, district work period, let me call it that, rather than
fact,
August
26th. Somebody said last night, you know, shouldn't you be taking it easy? I said, are you kidding? This is how I learn. I get out and talk to constituents. So
yeah.
Anyway.
Well, I'm interested in hearing what they're telling you, but let's first see what you have to say about the debt deal that was struck earlier this week and that is now, I think, going to shape an awful lot of things that we care about, including possibly some national security capabilities of this country. And I'd like to get your thoughts as well as any that your constituents might have on the subject.
Well, I think it was a disastrous deal. I know this is mainly about national security. This bill is about national security, and I could not believe, not only did we not make cuts to existing spending, we simply made decreases in the amount of increase. And in fact, I got some of my fellow members mad at me messages like, hey, man, you're out here hurting conservatives that your friends, and just because we didn't vote against this bill. And we've talked to Paul Ryan, we've talked to the Budget Committee, and they say, you know, that you're wrong on this stuff. And anyway, talk to the committee. And so actually my lead staffer that helping on this had talked to the Budget Committee after I got a message like that, and they said not only was I right, but Frank, under the existing rules of the House, this bill could not make cuts to existing spending, but could only cut and make, you know, decreases in the amount of increase down the road. And if it made cuts to actual spending levels now, that would have violated our House rules and could only be done under an actual appropriation bill. So not only did it not do that, it couldn't do that under existing rules. But the thing that bothered me the most, and I brought it up to our other members in conference, now I won't say what anybody else said, but this is something that just irritates the heck out of me, that we would make hundreds of billions of dollars in cuts to our security. I mean, as I said, guys, this is like in ancient days, two kings playing poker, and one of them has nothing left to bet. So he says, okay, if I lose this hand, I think I got a good hand, but if I lose this hand, I'll tear down half of my city's wall, meaning that they'll be completely exposed to being taken over. You never, ever, ever put your security out there on the table as a marker in a deal. You just don't do that. And our leaders assured us, and you know, they were very adamant, we will never allow these kind of cuts to the military. But Frank, they put them on the table. So now it's possible. And okay, so say the committee comes back and says, we'll take, you can have a choice. We're raising taxes dramatically during this tough economic time, which means doom, even more doom to the economy, or you cut your security forces in half. Boy, there's a good choice, isn't it? But that's what this deal builds toward. That's the possibility that we've put in play.
Let me ask you, Congressman Louie Gohmert, the national security implications of this are of course, of paramount concern. I wonder what your thoughts are. You're a Republican. You're a man who understands the importance of Republican success in the next election cycle as well as anybody. Do you share my concern that, among other problems with this proposition, that just as Republicans have now, in effect, assumed responsibility, or at least shared responsibility, for some of the economic disasters that Barack Obama has perpetrated, that they may be adulterating their brand when it comes to their position on national security in a way that makes them responsible if very bad things happen? We talked with Corey Shakey earlier in the program. Her expectation is that we will be emboldening enemies and engendering more aggression from them. And to share responsibility for that would seem to be very much contrary to Americans, Republicans' interests.
One of my concerns about the way the deal was negotiated, we passed cut, cap, and balance. And then immediately turned around and said, oh, Senate, you don't like that? Well, let us throw another one at you. Frank, we never did get the Senate on the record as voting for anything. They didn't pass anything. We kept throwing them offers, and they didn't pass anything. That's just nuts. And one of my concerns was, even though I believed the speaker when he said that he and Harry Reid had negotiated the deal that ultimately got voted on and had negotiated about 10 days earlier, still Reid never said that. And so it does look like this is a Republican thing, even though it was what the Democrats in the Senate wanted, at least the Senate leadership. And then the other thing, you know, and I know, one of the things that Bin Laden, back before he was dead, had commented that, $500,000 they spent setting up 9/11, and that he was hoping that they would bring down the United States economically by doing these kind of things that don't cost much and yet set us reeling. Well, it did set us reeling, But the problem is we have also now become accessories to deepening our financial troubles just by not being responsible. Even bin Laden could never have foreseen that a United States government would take in $2.3 trillion and spend $3.8 or $9 trillion. That's just unthinkable, even to the craziest wackos out there. But son of a gun, that's what we've done, and it does expose us. And then when people see that we've put our own defense out there on the table and are willing to cut it by hundreds of billions of dollars, they got to be thinking we're nuts, and I think we were to do this.
Yeah. Congressman, let me take advantage of your expertise in the Homeland Security arena. You mm-hmm. are the ranking member
I was ranking vice chairman when we were in the minority. Excuse on crime, me. Terrorism, Homeland Security, and right. now I'm vice chair of it. Yeah.
Correction. Thank you. You serve in that capacity and oversee with I think as much acumen as anyone on the Hill, the challenging issues of how we best deal with violent extremism, as the administration likes to call it. They've now come up with a new initiative just this week, as you may know, Congressman, entitled Empowering Local Partners to Prevent Violent Extremism in the United States. And my concern is, and I'd just like your thoughts quickly on this, among the partners that they seem to want to embrace for this purpose are members of the Muslim Brotherhood, who are not necessarily violent at the moment, but are engaged in the destruction of the United States from within, by their own words. What's the reaction, you know, from at least yourself to this kind of initiative?
Well, it's hard to believe that we would be doing this. I brought it up to the FBI director earlier this year. Why in the world did it take? Because I had a letter from them saying in 2009 that they were suspending their partnership with CARE, and I was shocked because they've had evidence for 15 years before this that CARE was involved in funding terrorism, and I just couldn't believe it took till 2009 for them to get that message. But here this means they're coming right back, and you and I understand the Muslim Brotherhood is the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt. It's the Muslim Brotherhood around the world. Here they're, you know, trying to act like they're nonviolent, but the truth is they're still about the same thing, creating an international caliphate. And it's just incredible that we would be asking those bent on our destruction to help us against those bent on our destruction.
Yeah,
it just makes no sense. It is just incredible. It'd be, well.
You captured the thought brilliantly. I have to leave it at that. Congressman
right.
Louis Gohmert, thank you for your service
for your
to our
work,
country.
Thank you for
clarity that you bring to these issues and for standing up for all of us in the United States Congress, even sometimes against members of your own party.
It's
keep it up.
Fun.
Come back to us again soon. And God bless you. Thank you to all of you for listening. I hope you'll do so again next week. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Affney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.